Begin the current daf Masechet Ksubos daf Nun Zayin. Begin on the bottom line of daf Nun Vav and Beis. The Gemara continues the discussion from the previous daf, and that is, as our Mishnah said, and then the Gemara quoted a brisa that has three different opinions regarding the minimum requisite for the woman's ksuba. That is, Remeir holds that a woman cannot have, and one cannot even make that condition of trying to give her less than 200 zuz, because if he does, then it's going to be considered as if he has biznus with her. Then there was the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, who said that he could diminish, however, it cannot be orally done. It has to be done in writing, where he writes a regular ksuba for her, and she writes a receipt, a shaver, saying, I already received half, although she didn't, but then he's not going to be obligated in giving the whole 200. Then there was the opinion of Rabbi Yasi, who he said that no, one can make a condition on the ksuba, it's no problem, rishoi, they can make up whatever they want to make up, and he doesn't have to give the entire 200. Now that the Gemara brings a story that illustrates this halacha, that Achsei de Rami Bar Chama, the sister of Rami Bar Chama, Havas Nesivah L'Rav Avia, was married to Rav Avia. Now we continue on top of Nazayim and Aleph. Irkis, she lost the document of Ksubasa. She lost her Ksuba. Now Asl Kameh de Rav Yosef. So they came in front of Rav Yosef. So Amlahu, he said to them, don't worry. Hachi Amr Yehud Mishmol, this is what Yehud said in the name of Shmuel. That Zu Divre Meir, this is the opinion of Rav Meir. In other words, this that we mentioned before, which was quoted in our Mishnah, that whoever diminishes for a Besula less than 200, even in just his condition, as we qualified that in the previous daf, then the Tanai is batal. So although he has to give the 200, but it's still going to be considered a bilas nus, meaning, and what's the reason for that? Why? If she's anyways going to end up getting 200, so she's getting an appropriate ksuba. So why, if he's saying, oh, I'm only going to give you 100, even though he ends up giving 200, is considered bilas nus? Because she's not what's called semich das. She's not relying on getting it because he's saying he's not going to give me 200. Now, Bezin's going to force him to give it, but she doesn't rely on that, and therefore she's having intimacy with a man who she doesn't know for sure that she's going to get 200, meaning to have what's necessary for a married Jewish woman, so it's considered like she's not a married Jewish woman, as if it's nus. Now, therefore, here also, where according to a mayor, it would come out that it would be forbidden for a woman who lost the document of her ksuba to stay with her husband. And that is, even though she essentially has the ksuba, in other words, she shouldn't lose anything because she'll be able to collect in Bezdin just by the virtue of the Tanai Bezdin, of inherent conditions, which is that a woman collects a ksuba, but here again, if she doesn't have the document of her ksuba, so she's not semichtas, she's not confident to know that she's going to get the ksuba because she's saying, you know, I'm going to go ahead, I'm going to come to Bezdin after the divorce, and he's going to say, oh, I paid you already, and I'm not going to have a way of proving it because I lost my document of the ksuba. Therefore, according to Reb Meir, if a woman loses her ksuba, it's going to be the same type of halacha that it should be considered like a bias nus. Now, you're right. You're coming and saying you lost your ksuba, you shouldn't be able to stay with your husband now. But that's the words of Reb Meir. But the Chacham say, they argue and they say that we don't have to be concerned for this opinion of Reb Meir who he says that because she's not confident, and to say that it's bias nus. Rather, they hold, they hold that one could have his wife with 2 or 3 years without a ksuba. And therefore, since her mayor is a das yachid, he's an individual opinion in contrast to the sages who are the rabbim. Therefore, we don't have to be concerned for that. So it's okay. So you lost your ksuba. Even for 2 or 3 years, you can stay married without the document itself. Now, Amalei Abaye, but Abaye said to Rabbi Yosef, but Va'amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel, but Rav Nachman said in the name of Shmuel, the halacha kriya meir b'gzei reisav. You're right that, as it was said in that other halacha in the name of Shmuel, that this is only the opinion of a meir, but we follow the halachas of a meir when it comes to when he's stringent in the rabbinic injunctions on the biblical halacha of Issa v'Heter through the rabbinic decrees. Now this is a rabbinic decree where we consider it like a bias nos. According to Reb Meir, who holds it's not going to be a valid ksuba, we should follow his opinion. So Reb Yosef responded, if that's the case, then go ahead, write for her another ksuba, again, because based on what you're saying, that we follow Reb Meir in his stringent gezeiras, that we do have to be concerned that it would be like a bilas nus if a woman wasn't confident to know that she's going to get her ksuba of 200, when if she doesn't have the shtar ksuba, she doesn't have that confidence. Now Rashi points out just that although we said on Dafnun Aleph and Aleph, that if there was no ksuba written for her, the besula collects 200 in spite of that, and the Gemara there said that's going like a mayor. So Rashi says either because there is talking about in a place where they don't write a ksuba, so everyone's relying on the Tanai not, and there's no problem that it wasn't written, so that's why you could stay married without that. Or Rashi says, it's even talking about a place where they do write a Shtar Kesubah. And you're right, according to Meir, she'll still collect the 200, but as we said in the previous daf, that bia will still be a bia be'isser, and considering it as if it's no... Now, the Gemara resumes discussing this price that we just started off the daf with, quoting from the previous daf, that there was a machlekes, Reb Meir, Reb Yehuda, and Reb Yosi. So the Gemara says, Ki Asra Rav Dimi, when Rav Dimi came, he said, Amr B'Shimon ben Pazi, Amr B'Shimon ben Levi, Mishum bar Kapar. He said that the machlekes between Reb Yehuda and Reb Yosi, who they both argue in Reb Meir, and they hold that, no, it's not necessary for the husband to give a minimum of 200. He could bargain with her and get her down to saying, I'm going to give you a lesser than Ksuba. Now, the machlekes between them was that Reb Yehuda said that an oral condition will not work. It has to be in writing. Whereas Reb Yosi said that, no, even if they just make up a condition amongst themselves that's orally done, it's going to be okay. That could diminish the price tag of the Ksuba. So on that was said that their whole machlekes is betchila, only in the beginning, which the Gemara will shortly explain what does it mean, the beginning of what. But at the end, then according to everybody, even according to Reb Yosi, then the woman's not going to be forgiving on her ksuba. The reason is because she already was merited to it, and therefore her words are nothing, unless if, like Reb Yehuda had said, that she writes the receipt that I received, then that would work. But if it's at the end, then even Reb Yosi would agree that orally that's not going to work. That's what was said in the name of Reb Shubin Levi, in the name of Bar Kapar. Now, Rabbi Yechon Amar, this is all Rav Dimi quoting this. He first quotes the one opinion. Now, Rabbi Yechon said that actually, Bein Bezu or Bein Bezu Machlekes. No, both the beginning and the end is a Machlekes. So although the first opinion that Rav Dimi is quoting says that they're only arguing in the beginning, but they agree at the end, here, Rabbi Yechon is saying that no, the argument between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yosi is by both. Now, on that, Amr Bavo. Bavo says, regarding those two different opinions that were mentioned, he says, L'didi mefarsh li mened Rabbi Yechon. He says, to me was explained from Rabbi Yechon that Rabbi Yechon said, Da'anov Rabbi Shubin Levi loy pagina dodi mi, the second opinion mentioned by Rabbi Dimi, and Rabbi Shubin Levi, the first opinion mentioned by Rabbi Dimi, actually, we don't argue. How do you not argue? Rabbi Shimon Levi said the machlekes Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yosi is only in the beginning, but not at the end. Whereas Rabbi Yechon is saying it's both in the beginning and the end. So on that, Rabbi Bavo said that you have to qualify what is the beginning and the end that each opinion is mentioning. My betchila dekam Rabbi Shimon Levi. What was Rabbi Shimon Levi? What did he mean when he said the machlekes Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yosi is in the beginning? He meant tchilas chuppah, the beginning of the chuppah. Umay Saif, what did he mean that at the end that there's no argument and there everybody agrees? That was Saif Bia. That was at the end of Bia. So in other words, from the beginning of Chuppah till the end of Chuppah, that's what Bishub Ben Levi is saying, that that's where we have the Machlekes of Yehuda and Reb Yosi, if the woman would be foregoing on part of her Kesubah, if that has to be in writing or that could even be orally. But once they had Bia, then even Reb Yosi would agree that there's no substance in her words, and she can't be moichel, she wouldn't be moichel once she's zeicha. So that's what he meant, that at the end of Bia, that everyone's going to agree that it's not going to be a valid mechila unless it's done in writing. Now Rabbi Yechon said, v'chi kamina anno bein bezu machlokes, but when I said they're both in the beginning, and at the end there is a machlokes, I wasn't going on the end of what Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi had said, Tchilas chuppah v'soif chuppah. I was saying that they argue both in the beginning and the end. I meant the beginning of chuppah and the end of chuppah. Dehi tchilas bia, which that's the equivalent of the beginning of bia, where that's where there is a machlekes. The element of tchilas bia is going to be important for the next Gemara's discussion. For here, it doesn't necessarily have any relevance for what Rabbi Avoh is trying to illustrate from Rabbi Yechon's statement. But essentially, what he's trying to say is that The Saif Bia, Rabbi Yechon agrees to Rabbi Shimon ben Levi that there's no machloikis. Everyone would agree that her mechila is not a mechila. When Rabbi Yechon says, when I said that the beginning and the end is a machloikis, I meant the end of chuppah. Oh, the end of chuppah? Rabbi Shimon ben Levi agrees that that's considered what in the terminology that he used of tchila. Tchila meant tchila's chuppah. All the way till when you have Saif Bia, Then Seif B, he said everyone agrees. And I agree by Seif B. I wasn't saying that there's a machlekes by Seif B. I was saying it by Seif Chuppah. Therefore, there's no machlekes. That was one version of this discussion. Now, however, Kiasa Ravin, when Ravin came, he said a different version of the version that Rav Dimi said. He quoted that Amr Bishum Ben Pazi, Amr Bishum Levi, Mishum Baka Para, the machlekes libisayf. Not like Rav Dimi, who he said the machlekes between Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Yisi was in the beginning, and that everyone agrees at the end. His version of this discussion was that the argument is at the end. But here it's the other way around. The first version had that everyone agrees at the end that it's not a mechila, that she would not be just forgiving just with her words because she already married, they already had biyam. Here the argument is at the end, but in the beginning everyone agrees that it would be a mechila. Even Rabbi Huda, who requires generally in writing, if it's in the beginning, then she didn't merit anything yet, then she could be meichel even al tanai, meaning even orally. Now, Rabbi Yochanan Omar, and on this version, Rabbi Yochanan says, oh, bein bezu machlekes. No, by both the beginning and the end, there is a machlekes. Now, on that, Rabbi Yochanan said, l'dedim mefarsh limneid Rabbi Yochanan, to me it was explained from Rabbi Yochanan that he said, truthfully, da'anovi b'shum levi loy pagin adadi. We don't argue on each other. Now, how do they not argue? Didn't Rabbi Shimon Levi say that the machlekes is only at the end, but in the beginning they agree that it's going to be a mechila, and yet Rabbi Yochanan says both beginning and the end is going to be machlekes? So he says, because my liv saved during Rabbi Shimon Levi, what did Rabbi Shimon Levi mean when he said that the machlekes is at the end? That was a reference to the saif chuppah, the end of the chuppah. And what was the beginning that he said that they do not argue, that everyone agrees that it's going to be a mechila, even according to Rabbi Huda? That was tchilas chuppah, the beginning of the chuppah. Now, but v'chika mina no, bein mezu machlekes, but when did I say that they actually argue by both the beginning and the end? I agree that no one argues in the beginning of chuppah. Tchilas chuppah, even Rabbi Huda, I agree, is going to hold that she could be meichel, even orally, you don't need a writing. When I said that both beginning and end is going to be machlekes, it was tchilas biya v'saif biya. Now, as the Rishayim explained, there's really three different phases. There's tchilas biya, there's tchilas chuppah, then is on one extreme. The other extreme is saif biya. Chuppah is the wedding canopy and biya is the cohabitation. Then the middle phase is they're both the equivalent of each other. Saif chuppah is the same equivalent as tchilas biya. So essentially what he's saying is that I was saying that when is it that there is going to be machloikis, that was tchilas biya and saif biya. That's the end of Seif Chuppah, which Rabbi Shimon Levi said is the Machlekes, which is the equivalent of what Rabbi Yochanan is trying to say that I said Tchilas Bia, that's the same thing. That and additionally Seif Bia, Rabbi Shimon Levi would agree to me that that's going to be the Machlekes. He, when he said that the Tchilas is not a Machlekes, was Tchilas Chuppah, I agree, I wasn't talking about that. I was talking about Bia, and he was talking about Chuppah, and therefore there is no Machlekes between me and Rabbi Shimon Levi. Those are the two different versions of Rav Dimi and of Rav. Now with that, the Gemara brings Amar Papa. Rav Papa says that I don't prefer. I would not have explained this Gemara the way it's presented based on Rebbevo's interpretation. As Rav Papa explains, he says Ilav de Amar Rebbevo. If not for this statement of Rebbevo, which recorded before, that Rebbevo says Lididi mefarshi leminei Rabbi Yochanan. He says I heard in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that he says, actually, he says that me and Bishop Levi, we don't argue. The reason being is, how could you say they don't argue? Bishop Levi says, depending on which version it is of Rav Dimi or of Ravin's, but he says the Machlek is only in one entity, either Tchilo or Saif. And the other one, they both agree, but Rabbi Yochanan says that both are not a Machlekes. So on that, Rabbi Vohn quoted Rabbi Yochanan by resolving it by saying, oh, his tchila was not my tchila, my saif is not his saif. It's different things we were talking about, but really we agreed to each other. Now, so on that, Rabbi Papa says, had Rabbi Vohn not said that, Hava Amina, I would have thought to say that my first assumption would be that actually Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shimon Levi, pligi. Actually, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shimon Levi, they do argue. In other words, let's say take Rav Dimi's version, the first version, which is when Rabbi Shimon Levi said that, however, at the end, everyone agrees, meaning even according to Rabbi Yossi, that it's not going to be a mechila when it's done al-peh, orally. On that, Rabbi Yochanan actually, when he says, bizu u bizu, that is a machlekes, means yes, even by saif, that Reb Shimon Leib was talking about, that he said that it's not a machlekes, on that is where Reb Yechon would say no, that it is a machlekes. Whereas, in contrast to what comes out now based on Reb Avoah's interpretation, I would have said no, I would have said that Reb Dimi v'Ravin loy pliki. However, Reb Dimi and Ravin, who, again, according to Reb Avoah's interpretation, they are the ones that are arguing, I would have said that they don't argue. What does it mean they don't argue? They don't argue in their interpretation of Reb Yeshua and Reb Yechanan. So how would I resolve their interpretations? They seemingly are definitely arguing. Because Reb Dimi's version has it that Reb Yeshua ben Levi said the machlekes is in the beginning, but at the end everyone agrees that it's not a mechila. But Ravin's version had Reb Yeshua ben Levi saying that no, that the machlekes is at the end, but in the beginning is where everyone agrees that it's going to be mechila. So Reb Papa explains, he says, no, I would have said, my seif to come a Ravin. What does Ravin mean when he says the name of Reb Yeshua ben Levi, that the machlekes is at the end, and it's only in the in the beginning they agree, which Ravin is the second version, it's the machlekes regarding seif chuppah, which as we explained before, that there's three different phases that the Rishonim explain, which is tchilas bia, which is tchilas chuppah, which is one extreme, and seif bia, which is the other extreme. The middle phase, which is seif chuppah, is the equivalent of tchilas bia. So what's coming out according to Ravin's version, that Reb Yeshua ben Levi saying that the machlekes is by tchilas bia, that would essentially be the same thing that Rav Dimi saying, because umay tchila dekam Rav Dimi. What did Rav Dimi mean when he says in the name of Reb Yeshua ben Levi that the machlekes is in the beginning? It means tchilas bia. It means the beginning of bia, which that is the equivalent of seif chuppah. So essentially, I would say Rav Dimi and Ravin, they're saying the same thing. When they're saying Reb Yeshua ben Levi's opinion, where is the machlekes? They're both talking about the same point. When Rav Dimi says it's in the beginning that's the machlekes, he means the beginning of bia. When Ravin says at the end, it's the end of chuppah, which end of chuppah, beginning of bia, is the same thing. It's where you go straight from the chuppah to have bia. Now, however, let's say regarding the end of bia, so everyone would agree that it's not going to be a mechila. There's no argument. Whereas Rabbi Yechanan, he argues on both Rav Dimi. Again, Rav Dimi and Ravin's interpretation is the same, although they said it in different ways, that they're not really arguing, is what Rav Papa says, I would have said. But Rabbi Yechanan is the one that argues in Rabbi Shu ben Leiv, and he says that no, even Seif Bia, that the machlik is going to be between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yasi. Now, however, regarding Tchilas Chuppah, everyone would agree that there is a mechila. So it comes out, what Rav Papa is saying, he says, I could find a way that if not for Reb Avoah, Ravin and Rav Dimi would be agreeing. They both agree that in the beginning, Tchilas Chuppah is going to be mechila according to both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yasi. Seif Bia, which is the third, the other extreme, that everyone agrees that's not going to be a mechila. Tchilas Bia, which is the equivalent of Seif Chuppah, which again, Rav Dimi is saying one way and Ravin's using another terminology, but they both reference the same thing, and that's where the machlekes is. And it's only Rabbi Yechon who he's arguing on Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi when he says that, no, it's Af Bezu. What's Af Bezu? There's no Tchila and Seif that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi argues on. It must be that Rabbi Yechon says Af Bezu, that also the end and the beginning, again, according to this interpretation of Papa, there's no beginning and the end. So it must be that Rabbi Yechon is arguing Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. But now the Rav Papa is insinuating that Reb Avoah explained in Rav Dimi, that in Rav Dimi's version, that both according to Reb Yechon and Reb Yeshua ben Levi, again, because he wanted to quote Reb Yechon as saying that his opinion doesn't contradict Reb Yeshua ben Levi, that Reb Yasi and Reb Yehuda argue by Tchilas Chuppah and by Seif Chuppah. So obviously, that must be that Ravin is arguing on Rav Dimi. Because Ravin said that according to everybody, Tchilas Chuppah is going to be Mechila. But according to the way the Reb Avoah is quoting Ravidi's interpretation, so that Rabbi Yechon could work out with Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, he had to say that, oh, Rabbi Yehuda is not arguing on Rabbi Yechon. I mean, that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is not arguing with Rabbi Yechon, because that was talking about that in the beginning and the end is a machlekes, meant Tchilas Chuppah and Seif Chuppah. But at the end, which was Seif Bia, that we all agree that that's going to be, that there's not going to be a Mechila over there. Again, so therefore, it comes out according to Reb Avo. He says, I would have said not like that. But now, based on Reb Avo, you're going to have to say that it's Reb Dimi and Ravin that are arguing. So now, the Gemara asks, my Kamash Malan, what is Reb Papa teaching us with this whole statement when he says, Ilav Dukam Reb Avo, had he not said this, I would have said like this. But Reb Avo does say it. And obviously, he doesn't want to argue in Reb Avo. So what halacha is he teaching us by saying, had Reb Avo not said that, I would have preferred to say it in a different way. So fine. But what is that teaching us now? So the Gemara says, Hakamashman, that is teaching us something very important. That when we find Amiram that argue on each other, where each Amor is saying his own opinion, then additionally, which the equivalent in this sugya would be the machlekes of Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shu ben Levi, and additionally we have two other Amiram, they're arguing in the interpretation of one Amora, and we could explain the two subsequent machlekesin in two different ways. Option number one is that two Amiram, where for our argument's sake we'll call them Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shu ben Levi, argue in their own opinions, meaning each one is saying his own logic. Now, then you have the other two Amiram, which is in our case Rav Dimi and Ravin, who they're not arguing in the interpretation of each one of those Amiram. Rather, they're saying the same thing, which would be how Rav Papa would have explained the Gemara. Now, option number two is that the two Amiram are actually arguing in the interpretation of each one of the Amiram. For example, like Rav Dimi and Ravin, that they're arguing about how to interpret the first Amiram. And actually, those first Amiram, like we'll call them Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon Levi, they agree to the same halacha. They're not arguing with each other. So that Rav Papa is teaching us that we leave the version, the option number two, where you have two Amiram that are arguing according to one opinion, and rather we are the pligi triamiroya time de nafshaya. Rather, we prefer to say that you have two Amiram that are arguing regarding their own opinions, veloy pligi triamiroy aliba de charamoyer. And we don't say that two Amiram are arguing in the interpretation of one Amiram. In other words, when you have two Amiram that are arguing according to one opinion, We'll call them Rav Dimi and Ravin, who they're arguing about the interpretation of Rabbi Shu ben Levi. What is it Rabbi Shu ben Levi said? Where Rav Dimi saying, this is what Rabbi Shu ben Levi said. And Ravin saying, no, this is what Rabbi Shu ben Levi said. Which is what comes out according to Rabbi Avo's interpretation of the Machlekes Rabbi Shu ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan, because it says they're not arguing. He says that they agree, and since he's saying they agree, so it comes out that the version of Dimi and Ravin are arguing, as we mentioned before, comes out that either of Dimi or Ravin is lying. Someone's saying an untruth because Rabbi Shu ben Levi didn't say both of that. Now, so therefore we don't prefer to say that. But when two Amiram are arguing on the Din, or Halacha and Issa v'Hetter, where each one is saying what seems logical to him to be the halacha, there's no lies over here. Each one is just saying what seemingly is appropriate, what he thinks the halacha is going to be. And he gives a reason to say why it's mutter, and he gives a reason to say why it's aser. He compares it to something that has a precedent in halacha, and he compares it to something else. Now, you can say the halachic dictum of elu be'elu dira kimchaim, because actually the realities of both are true. Sometimes it actually applies more to that reasoning, and sometimes it applies more to that reasoning. And since it's something that could be so easily changed, as if one puts a tea bag in hot water on Shabbos, well, it's cliche, what's mutter, what's not, they're all coming with precedent in halacha, and there's no lies. There is svaris lahakal, there's svaris lahachmer, and there's understandings in the halacha conceptualization that fits into both. So what Rav Papa is teaching is an important lesson. He says, look, I'm not arguing with Rav Avo if he says that that's the tradition that he has. Rav Yechon has said that he's not arguing with Rav Shu ben Levi. But had he not said that, I'm telling you by my havamina, you would realize that we prefer to say that Rav Dimi and Ravin are not arguing, and rather have Rav Yechon and Rav Shu ben Levi arguing. Because Rav Yechon and Rav Shu ben Levi, what they're arguing is that each one has svara to say, and they have what to stand on in saying that where is it that there was Machlokes Rav Yehuda and Rav Yosi. Now, and Rav Dimi and Ravin, they're not arguing in each one, they just use different vernacular. But according to Rav Avo, that's more difficult. We don't usually say that, to say that, oh, the Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shu ben Levi are not arguing, they agree, but Rav Dimi and Ravin are arguing what is it Rabbi Shu ben Levi said, what is it Rabbi Yochanan said, that is something we prefer not to say, and that's what we learned from Rav Papa's statement. Now the Gemara continues, the next Mishnah, Nisan lebesula. We give to a besula time to get ready for the chuppah. Shnayim asr chaydish mishetava habal. 12 months from when her husband petitioned her after that they had kedushin to go get ready for the chasna to prepare what she needs for the chuppah and all her jewelry. So from that point on, when he says, okay, are you ready to get married? Then they give her 12 months, lefarnes atzmat, so that she can prepare for herself all her jewelry and all her makeup and everything that she needs. That takes 12 months. Now, kashem shenayis l'ish, the Mishnah says, just like they give the woman 12 months, kach nayis l'ish, so too they give for the man, lefarnes atzmat, that he can prepare for himself, which is preparing the whole suda and the chuppah and all the things that are necessary for the wedding. Now, however, for a widow, they only give her 30 days. The reason is because she doesn't have to prepare so much for the jewelry because she already has from before. She was already married once before. Now, the Mishnah says, Higiyaz man v'lei nisu. Let's say the 12-month deadline came about and they didn't get married yet because the husband is holding up the affair. Then, eichlis mishaloi v'eichlis b'tshuma. So she already starts eating from his estate, meaning as she would when she would get married. And moreover, she even eats truma. In other words, if the husband-to-be, who she's engaged to, is a kohen, and she's Yisraelis, who actually, biblically, min ha-Torah, she could actually eat truma, even from when she just got engaged. But the Rabbanan make a gzera at the time of Erisin. But however, once it reaches the time of 12 months, when he's halakhically supposed to marry already, and he doesn't, it's already held up, so then she could even eat truma, even rabbinically. Now, however, we have machlekes that Reb Tarfon, I mean, he says, Nisan laha kol truma. He gives her everything from truma. In other words, if he wants to, now that he has to start feeding her, he could give all of the food that he has to feed her truma. And when she's in the days of tuma, where she obviously cannot eat truma in the state of tuma, then she sells the truma and she purchases with it chulin, which she could eat in her yimei tuma. Whereas Reb Kiva, I mean, he argues, he says, mechtza chulin, half has to be chulin that she could eat when she's in the days of tuma, umechtza truma, and then the other half could be truma. Now the Mishnah continues on these halachas, that hayavim ina meicha b'truma. A yavim, meaning when she's in this similar type of middle state as she is when she's engaged to the kayan, where the equivalent would be when her husband dies without any children and she's a shemeres yavim, she's waiting for the yavim to do bia. And at that stage, the yavim does not feed her truma. The Gemara will explain the reason for that. Now, moreover, let's say she was engaged to the husband and she waited out of the 12 months that we give her from when the husband petitions her to get married. 6 months were spent when her husband was still alive. Then he died. Then she spent another 6 months waiting for the yavim to do yibum. So even if she did 12 months, but six months were by the chasen and 6 months were by the yavim, or vafilu kulim b'fnei habal, or even if she waited all 12 months by her husband chasu yom echad b'fnei yavim, except for one day, she almost made the 12 months, but minus a day which was spent in front of the yavim as a shemeres yavim. So although the majority of it was in front of the husband, but at the end, he was never obligated in her mezainis because she didn't have 12 months from mishatav habal in front of the one that she was engaged to. Now, actually, Rashi points out that even if it was 12 months in front of the husband and he became obligated mezainis, but once he dies and now she's a shemeres yavim, she would not continue eating truma because the kinyan of her husband gets removed. And the only thing that the Mishnah is pointing out is that what we mean to say is that since it wasn't all 12 months in front of the husband, so she never eats, even when he is alive. Now, oy, the Mishnah continues, are kulan b'fnei ha-yavim, or let's say if all the 12 months was in front of the yavim, chasa yemechad b'fnei ha-baal, except for one day which was spent in front of the husband, which the Gemara is going to ask, what's that necessary for? If we even said almost all of it in front of the husband will not work because one day is in front of the yavim, why are we saying all of it in front of the yavim besides one day in front of the husband? But be that as it may, all these halachas are in echeles b'truma. She does not eat truma. It's only when she had 12 months in front of the husband and is still alive, then he would have to feed her. But all the other types, she doesn't get to eat truma. Now, however, the Mishnah says that this halacha that the Mishnah just mentioned before, that when it's higiyazman, the time of 12 months reaches, then she eats truma even though she didn't go through nisuin yet, that was Mishnah Rishayna. That was the first version of the Mishnah which said that halacha. But Bezin Shalachrei and Amr, but a later Bezin said, and this is what this Mishnah is saying, and this is one of the sources to say that there were actually earlier versions of the Mishnah before Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi put it together in the Mishnayos, So on that, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi is putting into this Mishnah, saying that a later Bezdin came along and said, but no, a woman never eats truma, even if it already was the 12 months that they had set up, until she enters into the chuppah, and the Gemara will explain the reason for that. Now the Gemara first asks, where do we know this halacha of the 12-month wait for the kedushin going all the way till nisuin? So Amrav Chizda, the Amar Karlik, the pasuk says, regarding when Eliezer was coming to take Rivka as a wife for Yitzchak, so the pasuk says, V'yomer achia v'ima. So her brother and her mother said, Teshav hanara itanu yam mayasa, let the girl stay with us days or 10, and let her prepare herself, and then she'll come. Where Eliezer insisted, no, I want to take Rivka now, and Rivka agreed, and they went right away. So the question is, my yamim. What does it mean that they requested from Eliezer to let Rivka stay days? Ilema, as the literal translation would sound like, trei yomi, it means 2 days. But mishtoy inesh hachi, do people talk like that? In other words, amrulei trei yomi. First they said, let her stay for 2 days. Amrulei says, no. And then amrulei asar yomi, then they said, okay, fine, so let her stay 10 days? What do you mean? If he said no to yamim, to 2 days, so why are you saying a larger amount afterwards? Oh, 10 days. You don't ask for more once you already got said no, rejected of a lower number. And the mayam, rather, what does it mean when they said, let her stay yamim, and if not, then let her stay at least 10 days? Yamim was a reference to shana, to a year. And this is the source for 12 months, where a woman generally has to prepare 12 months, a year, before she could go from kedushin to nisun. So it's like it says, a pasuk in Mayikra, which is Mayikra perek hafei pasuk of test, that says, v'ish ki yimkra bai beis moishiv ir chayim, that a man that will sell a house that he has in a walled city. So it says in the pasuk, that the redemption will be until the end of the year that he sells it, yamim tiyagulasai, that the redemption should be, can be for days, which we see from the context of that pasuk is clearly a reference to a year. And therefore this is the source of the halacha, as it says there in the pasuk. So they asked, let her stay a year, yamim. And they said, if not, let her at least stay 10 days. And he says, no, he took her right away. But we see from that pasuk that there's an element of a woman preparing 12 months before she has her chasna. However, the Gemara asks on this source. The Ema say, what does it mean, yamim? Maybe it means chaydish. Maybe it meant to say that a month. And if not, then let her stay aser, meaning then let her stay for 10 days. To say, like it says, the pasuk by Midbar. It says, ad chaydish yamim, until a month of days. So we see that yamim can be a reference to chaydish too. So who said it's a reference to a year or 10 months? And maybe it's a reference to a month or 10 days? So I mean, they said that no. Because dan in yamim stam, mi yamim stam. The source for this halacha will learn out that the context of the word yamim itself from a different pasuk where it says yam itself, where you have yamim to galasa, which that's clearly a year. So that could reflect on the pasuk in Bereishis, which it says they wanted to prepare yamim, which would be a year. They ain't done the yamim stam, the yamim shenem ben chodesh. But we cannot learn out the word yamim, from meaning in Bereishis, from a place where it says yamim together with the word chodesh to say that that's where yamim means chodesh. And therefore, we'd rather learn from the yamim, which says plain, which means a year, and that's how we know the halacha of a woman preparing 12 months, which is a year. Now, continuing on the similar vein of this of holding back the nisuin, so Amr Bzeri, he says, Tana, we learned, Ketana, a minor, Beinhi ubeina viyachin la'akev. Both the minor herself and her father could hold back from having this minor girl getting married, having nisuin, until she becomes an adult. So the Gemara asks, Bishlami ihi matzma'akev, we understand why the girl herself could hold back, because she's not ready yet, and she wants to be a mature adult to make that decision. Elavia, but her father, ihi nichala, if the girl is ready to go to get have nisuin, so via my nafkele minos, what does the father have any why does he care? Why would he hold back from the girl who's ready to get married from getting married? So the Gemara says, because the father has a say. Because Sava, the father thinks, Hashta lo yada, now she's innocent, she doesn't know what she's in for. Lamachr memrida, but tomorrow, once she sees what marriage entails, she's going to rebel against her husband because she's not going to be able to take it anymore. V'nafkan, she's going to leave the marriage. V'asya, then she's going to come to me to live until she becomes older. V'nafle levayit, she's going to fall on my head. And that means to say that I'm going to have to go ahead and then prepare for her all the jewelry and all the things again when she wants to get married again. And the father says, no, we're not ready for this. We want to wait till she gets older and she can make an appropriate decision. She knows what she's in for, and therefore not only could she hold back, but even the father could hold back. Now, Amar Abba Balevi, he says, in Poiskin al Katana, we do not set a time regarding a minor, Lahasiya Kashikatana, to have her go through Nisuin to get married when she's a minor. And the reason being is because we don't want to put her through Nisuin when she's a minor because it's too difficult for our marriage. She's not ready for that. But we could set aside a time for a minor that when she's going to have Nisuin, when she becomes an adult, which Rashi points out, it has to be without Kiddushin. But even Kiddushin cannot be done when she's a minor until she becomes an adult. And she says that I do want to get married to this person. So although you can't even have Kiddushin, but at least you could set aside the time and saying that although you're only 8, but when you become an adult, you're going to get married to this person then. So the Gemara is pshita, pretty obvious. What would be the problem with doing that? So the Gemara says, "Ma detema lechish dima ma'ayla pachta mahashta v'cholsha." You would think that if she knows now that when she becomes an adult, when I become a mommy, then I'm going to get married. So she's already now she's going to have this fear, and she's going to have this somatic experience of experiencing this fear, and it's going to cause her to become weak and become ill. So maybe we think that actually we do not set aside a time for her now, even just to be placing the time when she gets older to have Nisuin, to tell her now when she's a Ketana. Kamash Rolan, that's what we're telling you, that that's not a problem, and you could be placing for a Ketana to have Nisuin when she becomes a Gedayla, even now when she's a Ketana. Now, related discussion, the Gemara says, Amrav Huna, Bagur Yem Echad V'Niskatcha. Going back to this halacha of the waiting of the 12 months, Rav Huna says that if a woman became a Begeris just for one day, meaning she just turned over 12 and a half in one day, v'niskatcha, and she got engaged, then there's no more 12 months. You only give her 30 days like a widow, as we mentioned in the Mishnah, meaning from the moment she gets engaged, she only gets 30 days. Now, the reason for this is because by the time she's a Begeris, which definitely Talmudic times is older, she already prepared all her jewelry, everything that she would need before she became Begeris, and she doesn't want to wait any longer. And therefore, we give her just 30 days and she's ready to go. Now, that the Gemara asked Meisvei. However, we learned in the Braisa that seems to contradict Rav Huna. The Braisa says, Bagra harehi kitfua, a woman that's a Begeris, that she's over the age of 12 and a half, it's as if the husband petitioned her to prepare herself for Nisuin. So the Gemara asks, "My love, ketfuah de besula. What does it mean that as if she was a tefuah, like as she is, she's a besula, as a regular besula who's petitioned, who gets 12 months from the time she's engaged, not like Rav Huna said that it's only 30 days." But the Gemara says, "Like ketfuah d'almana." No, it fits with Rav Huna. It means like if that the moment she gets engaged is like she's petitioned by an almana, which an almana gets 30 days, which is exactly what Rav Huna said. So the Gemara said, "Toshima, come in here. Let's." Disproven from a Mishnah Maseches Nedarim. The Mishnah says, Begeres Shashasa Shnei Masachedish, a Begeres that already waited 12 months in her engagement. So he says, Hoil v'chayiv ba'ala b'mezuniseh, since the husband now has to feed her, as we said in the Mishnah, when Sigiyah's man of 12 months, he has to feed her. So Yafer, so now the chasin, he's not even, doesn't even have Nisun yet. Now, although in the time of Aris and the generally the chasin, and the father jointly have to do hafaras nedarim. But now that it's already after 12 months and he's feeding her, then he's mefer, he nullifies the vows by himself without a partnership with the father. Now, but one thing we see from this Mishnah is that a begeris also there's no obligation to feed her until it's 12 months, meaning that's the higiyazman, not 30 days like Rav Huna. So the Gemara says, no. Ema say that actually it's two different cases and there's like a vav that has to be added on. Begeris was one case. Meaning when the girl is over 12 and a half, then it's after 30 days. Or Vishishasa or a Naira, who is younger than the Begeris. If she waits, Shnaim HaSachaydish, 12 months, on that Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Ha'ilubay L'chayv B'mnesel, since at this point, which again for Begeris is 30 days, and for this other category, Shishasa Shnaim HaSachaydish was a reference to a Naira, which is after 12 months, then he already has to feed her, so then Yafer, then he can nullify the vows on his own and doesn't need the father. But again, it's not saying that a Begeris, Sheshas Hashem HaSachedish, it's a Begeris, Vishashas Hashem HaSachedish. So the Gemara continues attempting to disprove the opinion of Rav Huna. Toshima, we learn the Braisa that says, Hama'aris es ha-besula, someone that gets engaged to a besula. So, Bein Shetavah HaBal, Vihimakevis, whether it's the husband that petitions, okay, are you ready to get married? and she's holding back. Whether she's petitioning, saying, okay, let's get ready to get married, and he's holding back, which as we explained in the Mishnah, that the Rabban also give time for the husband to prepare, where he has to prepare the needs for the chuppah and for the chasna. So either way, we give them 12 months from the time that the petition happened, whichever direction it's going. But not from the time that they got engaged, it's only from the time of the petition. Now, moreover, the Brisa says, "Ubagra harehi kitfua." When she's begaris, it's automatically considered as if she was petitioned. Now, Kate said, "How would that mean? Bagriyim echad min eskatshiv. She was begaris just one day, and she already got engaged. Nois nala, and this is the key that contradicts Rav Huna. Shneim astro chaydish. We give her 12 months. Now, larusa, which means to say that there is an arusa." That we only give her Shloishim Yom 30 days, which the Gemara will shortly explain what that means. But one thing we see is Tiyuv to Rav Huna seems to refute the opinion of Rav Huna, who he said Bagri Yemecha v'Neskatcha gets only 30 days, and here the Brisa clearly says Shnayim Asachaydish. So the Gemara concludes Tiyuv that definitely refutes his opinion, and that is even if a girl is a Begeres and she's then Neskatcha, that then actually the halacha is going to be that she gets 12 months and not 30 days. But the Gemara does ask, what does it mean that an arusa gets 30 days? Which arusa are we talking about that it gets 30 days? We said generally an arusa gets 12 months. So Amar Papa says, this is what the Brisa was saying. Which is really what Rav Huna wanted to say, but just further, Rav Huna's interpretation was refuted. If she became a begeris one day and then gets engaged, then she gets 12 months, not like Rav Huna. But what this case of the Brisa was talking about, if she was already begeris already for a year already, she's already 13 and a half, and then in the scotcha, then she gets engaged, then that's where the Brisa would agree, nation law shleishim yom, then you only give her 30 days from when she gets engaged, ka'amono, like an amono, who gets 30 days. But one thing is that the opinion of Huna is refuted, and that even the begeris gets 12 months, it's only if she was already a begeris for 12 months, then she would only get 30 days, like an amono. Now the Mishnah said, Higia Zman V'lei Nisu. If the time, at least this was according to the Mishnah Rishayna, if the designated time of 12 months for that she should have enough time to prepare for the wedding comes and the husband's holding back and doesn't get married, so then he has to give her from his food and moreover he even gives her from Chuma. So the Gemara explains this halacha. Amma Ula says that Dvatar actually, according to biblical halacha, Arusa Bas Yisrael Lechas B'Chuma. Even a woman that's just engaged to a kohen could already eat truma, which although a non-kohen is not allowed to eat it, she's already considered in the category of being able to eat truma. Remember, like it says in pasuk in Vayikra, it says in Vayikra, perich of beis pasuk gedalf, it says v'kohen ki yikne nefesh, that a kohen will acquire a soul, kinyan kaspo will be the acquisition of his money. So the pasuk there says hu yoichel bo, the kinyan kaspo, something that's acquired by the kohen, either his isha who's acquired with money or his eved. Now v'hai nami kinyan kaspo hu. The arusa is also kinyan kasboy, which is we do it together with the nisuin by the chuppah, but that's giving the ring. It's with money that he acquires her. So she's kinyan kasboy. So biblically, she could already eat shumo by engagement. Now, matam amru in achela, so what's the reason why they said that an arusa cannot eat? That's because shemiyim zugula kais. We're concerned that maybe her chasan, who is engaged to his kala, he's going to give her, pour her a cup of chuma. Bevesavia, when she's still in her father's house, because as long as they were just engaged, she would stay by her father's house. Now, v'tashke lachel lachais, we're concerned that she's going to have her brothers and sisters want to drink from the delicious wine she's getting from her chasen. Problem is, she could drink, but they cannot. So to avoid that problem, we don't allow her to eat truma when she's just engaged. Now, then the question is, if that's the case, so how do we understand our Mishnah? Higiyas man v'lei nisu nami, then even if the time of 12 months have reached and they're not yet married, she should still not be able to eat truma. Why does our Mishnah say she could eat truma? She shouldn't be because she's still in her father's house and she still might give to her brothers and sisters. So I think Mo explains that no, Hasam, over there, since now he has to feed her, she's on his payroll, so he takes her out of her father's house. And duchta miyachad loy. He designates a specific place where she should eat because he doesn't want to lose all his money on her because he's afraid that whatever he's giving her to eat, she's going to say, oh, I didn't have enough to eat because she's sharing it with all his siblings. So to avoid that problem, because now he has to support her, he designates a separate place for her, and therefore, because now she's not near her brothers and sisters when she's eating anymore, we don't run into that problem of maybe that she's going to give them to eat and drink from that truma. But the Gemara asked, but Elamayata, but if that's the case, when you have a locket, which is someone that was hired to gather the tefuah of an owner, who the worker is a kayin, who's hired out to Ali Yisrael. He's working for Yisrael. Loy lecha v'truma, the kohen worker should not be allowed to eat truma. Why? Because Dilma Asur Lamecha Badei, you explained the reason why an Arusa doesn't eat truma, although biblically she's allowed to, because maybe she's going to share with her siblings. So here also, why do we allow the worker who is a kohen to be eating his truma when he's working for Yisrael? Maybe he's going to share it with his employer. So that the Gemara answers, Hashta midid hu safale. What do you mean? The employer is feeding his employee, the kayin, from his own food. Midide achli. What do you mean? You think that they're going to eat from the employee? They're not eating from him. Therefore, there's no concern over there. Siblings are going to be sharing from each other, but an employer is not eating from the employee. That's one interpretation. Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda Amar, he says that why an Arusa doesn't eat truma until it's the time of 12 months, when then he's obligated in the Mezainis, is Mishum Simpon. Now, what Simpon means, Rashi says that Simpon is a term of nullification. And we find many times that different things are called Simpon because that's what they did, they're nullifying. For example, a Sheva, a receipt, which nullifies the document, is called Simpon. Or a blemish in a woman or an animal, which nullifies the sale, is called Simpon. Now, here also, we made a Gezerah that maybe when they finally consummate the relationship, this woman that he was engaged to and he was so endeared to, he finds that there's certain blemish about him that he never knew. So it's going to come out that his kedushin to her was a mistake, hence nullified. Now, therefore, if she was eating truma up until now as they were engaged, before he consummated the relationship to realize there was something wrong with her, it's going to come out that a non-kohenis, because now retroactively they were never engaged, was eating truma. So because of that concern, we don't let her eat truma until they consummate the relationship. Now that the Gemara asks, ihachi, but if that's the case, so nichnas to luchuppah v'lei nivla nami, then even if they go to chuppah, which we're saying even less than that. In other words, the Gemara is assuming now that at the point in time by chuppah, he doesn't yet know all her blemishes, is when they finally have bia, when they finally are intimate, then he could realize her blemishes that were being covered up. Now then the question is, so why did our Mishnah say, even according to Mishnah Achreina, that until she goes to the chuppah, that however, but when she comes to the chuppah, she could eat truma. So, and for sure, it's going to be a question according to Mishnah Rishayna, when he gives man of 12 months, she could eat truma. Why? Why could she eat truma? Until they actually have bia, you should be concerned from a sinfon that maybe he's going to find out about a blemish that he didn't know about. So that the Gemara answers, Hasim over there, Mivdak Badikla. He inspects her through his relatives. He has them go check her out and find out everything about her. And only Vahadimail, and only then does he go ahead and have chuppah with her. And according to the Mishnah Rishayna, would be when it reaches the time when he should have had chuppah, so it's his liability. But be that as it may, when this chuppah, you don't ever concern the symphon anymore, although they weren't physically intimate, but he really knows all about her that he needs to know, and therefore there's not going to be mekach tois anymore after chuppah. But the Gemara asks, Elamiyatum, but according to this interpretation of the symphon, the question is that when you have Eved Kayin, when you have a servant of a slave of a Kayin, Shalakachem Yisrael, who he purchased from a non-Kayin from Yisrael, Loy Lechel B'Truma, the Eved should not be able to eat Truma, Mishun Simfain, because they're Simfain. In other words, that you should have the same concern, that maybe he's going to find something wrong with him. Comes out that the Eved, who was eating Truma all along, as Eved Kayin, who's Kenyan Kasboy, was eating it as a Yisrael, meaning if he's a regular Eved, so he's a non-Jew, it's no problem. But if it's purchased from a Yisrael, an Eved of Yisrael has halacha as a certain status of a Jew, which is forbidden to eat truma. So therefore, when the kohen purchases him, how does the Eved eat? Maybe the master is going to find something wrong with him, and therefore it's going to come out retroactively. He was never an Eved kohen, and he ate truma as a zar. So I think my answer is simfin ba'avadim leka. There is no blemish in a slave that can nullify the sale. Reason very simple. D'idavroi, if it's a blemish that's visible on the outside, so he sees it and he's accepting him anyway. V'idgavoi, and if it's a hidden blemish, so he's not being intimate with this slave. He just needs him to work. What's concealed doesn't bother him. So why should that be sinfon, which you would have with a woman? You don't have that with a slave. Now, if you're going to say, what do you mean? There are certain blemishes which you don't know about, which if you find out about it, you can say, I don't want them anymore. Nimtzaganev, in other words, if you find out that he's a thief, or as we continue on top of Nunchesman Alf, Kyub Yustas, comes out that he's a kidnapper, even then, even if you didn't know that and you find it out later, actually he Giyoy. The sale is valid and the purchaser has to hold on to the slave, and the sale is not bottle. As this is a Bryce that's taught him Masechtas Baba Basra, that if someone sells a slave to his friend and it comes out that the slave is a thief or a kidnapper, that the sale is valid because that's what these people are. Who do you think is being sold? People that are ganavim, and therefore that wouldn't be considered a concern of simfon to say that, oh, maybe he's going to be that the sale is batel, because that will not be mevatel the sale because this is something that he should have known. So my ikka, so what would be that let's say is not so common, which is to say that higia, that could be mekach tois, that you don't know about it, which would be a concern, let's say it would be list to mezuyin. Let's say that he's an armed bandit, which is not such a normal thing. To be a thief, yeah, but to be this real bandit that's armed to the teeth, that's not so common. Or he's someone that did something wrong to the government, who they put a reward on his head that he should be killed. So that's something that definitely someone does not want to have such a slave in his possession. So now the Gemara says that's also not a concern because Hanu Kol Islu, that there are the word gets out about such a person. And therefore, if the guy's taking him as a slave, he obviously knew about it and he accepted. And therefore, there's no case of finding a blemish in a slave that you'll find out about that would be considered a nullification of retroactively. And therefore, the Eved Kohen could eat right away. And there's no concern in the Simfon like there is by a wife when she's engaged. Now, the Gemara concludes this discussion by asking, so, Mechti, let's see. Bein Lamar or Bein Lamar Loi Ochlo. According to both interpretations, whether it's because of she might give to eat and drink to her siblings, that's why she could not have as Narusa, although biblically she could, or the reason is because of Simfon, because he doesn't yet know her intimately and he might find something wrong with her, which will be a Mekach Tois L'Mafreya. But either way, both interpretations hold she cannot eat as Narusa. So my Benayu, what's the halachic difference between them? I think Moses says, Ike Benayu, there are two differences. Kibel, if let's say the husband accepted upon him all blemishes, he says that even if he finds a blemish, it will not nullify the Kedushin. So then there's no concern with Simfon anymore. But there would still be a concern that you would not be able to give her Truma to eat as Narusa because she might give to her brothers and sisters to eat and drink. That would be one difference between the two different interpretations. Another one is Masar. If the father gives the daughter over to the messengers of the husband, or Vahalach, or the messengers of the father are going with the messengers of the husband, that there's no concern of her giving to her brothers and sisters to drink, because they're not here. She's already on her journey. Her new husband lives overseas, and she's going on the journey. They're not there. So then she could already start eating truma. However, there would still be the concern, the simfon, because he never yet even met her. She's already in a different country, and therefore he might find out that it is a mekach tois, and therefore, according to that interpretation, she would not be able to eat truma, and therefore those are the two different ramifications of that halacha, why she cannot eat as a rusa, if it's because of she might feed to her brothers and sisters, or if it's because of that he might find a blemish, which is called simfon. Are these two different cases of if he accepts upon them, says blemishes will not nullify it, and the other cases is most of a halach, if the father sends her off, or she's together with the messengers of the father, and it can't be the father going alone, because then she might give her father to eat, but if she's on the journey, she's not near any of her relatives, there's no problem of our brothers and sisters, but there would still be the problem of simfon.